Welcome, Aviators of Fortune, to episode 88 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where we screen anime on the big screen 24/7. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And today we will be discussing some anime, specifically a movie we did go see recently on the big screen, and in honor of our 88th episode, an anime that we visited for the first time after having been fans of the video game based on it many, many years ago. Before we get into tonight's topic, however, we will start things off in our usual fashion here at the Nerdstravaganza podcast by regaling you with tales from our lives with our weekly Geekly Weekly Roundup. Brian, go first, because you're the only person here who is not me. What have you been up to?
Kind of an exciting week. I finally broke down and ordered some anime tactics. I've been eyeing those figures for a little while. And hoping I would find somebody who actually played the game or liked the game or wanted to play the game, and then realized I don't ever play any of the other games that I own, so I just bought some cool-looking figures, and I'm going to paint them. F the game.
Sure. It's all about the figures, just the hoarding and collecting. I know we've been over this a couple times. Anime Tactics, what it sounds like, a tactics game with anime-inspired figures?
Anima Tactics, I'm sorry. The theme got to me.
Right, Anima. I'm familiar now.
But yeah, it's just, I think it's squad-based, skirmish, miniatures, tabletop rules, blah, 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 you know. But some of the figures are pretty badass looking, and I felt like getting away from the steampunk robots that I've been painting for months, so thought I'd try something new out. I have an elfy-looking tree dweller, really badass anime girl with a sword, like, buried in a headstone in front of her, kind of, like, leaning over it. Really intimidating pose. Just looks like fun to paint.
Nice, man.
Just today, I'm actually still recovering from the sunburn. I did my community service. Gave a little back. That's the theme lately. Attended Rail Fun Day in support of Stranahan House and the local Tri-Rail system. Mentioning that mostly because it felt a lot like a convention. Kind of thought that was funny.
So this event to boost our local public transit system here felt like a convention.
It was like a little outreach gathering of different vendors and venues, and they all had their own booths, and it felt a lot like a vendor room. And it was actually outside in the scorching sun, so everyone was sweating their nuts off, so they kind of had a reason to smell.
Not just bad hygiene, as is the case at most
cons. Correct. But, you know, still a familiar odor. A familiar atmosphere.
Cool. Well, as the resident South Florida transit geek, I approve of your spending your day boosting public transit, man. That was awesome.
They were pretty happen in place too. I think they were happy with it. A lot of folks showed up. I think they cheated just a little bit because they kind of had a captive audience. As soon as you got off the Tri-Rail, you had to walk through the Tri-Rail convention. But, you know, hey, that's good design.
I've got a vision now manifesting itself in my head. I think we need to do some kind of like cosplay event on rails where somehow we entice a bunch of people in cosplay costumes one weekend or something to ride the Tri-Rail to some destination. We'll have to figure this out, but I think this could be a really big event.
Oh, God.
The Extravaganza puts on.
Dude, we could totally do it. We could do a that stupid game, Werewolf. We could do a Who's the Titan mystery theater.
Cool. I like it. Tie the public transit into our event. So it's a thought.
And lastly, I've been reading a book and a novelist that I've meant to read since I first learned what a nerd was many, many moons ago, but just never got around to it. I'm reading Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick. Finally.
Ah, and so far, good.
It's very interesting. Honestly, I've read some writers that just put him to shame lately, but I kind of feel almost about Ready Player One. Not the best writing in the universe, but really thought-provoking and a very good ride.
Awesome, man. Coincidentally, I downloaded that ebook recently, and it's in my reading queue when I finished The Exile Kiss, which I'm currently reading. I will probably move on to that just so we can be in sync.
Cool. And you, sir, how have you spent your last week and a half?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Reading The Exile Kiss, the third in the Effinger series of Arabic cyberpunk adventures, I guess you could say. Noir. Got to throw noir in at the end somehow. Really enjoying that. Almost done, and I will hound you to read them so we can compare notes afterwards, after I move on to do Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, which I've been wanting to read as well for quite some time.
We can swap covers, or we can swap paperbacks.
Well, you can delete the file from your... Because assuming... Well, if you had an e-reader, this would work. You could delete the file from yours and give it over to me. That way, only one of us has one copy at one time. We've been over this on a past show way back when. You know, that's a fair way to ensure that we're not duplicating the work in some kind of twisted way. But yeah, doing a little bit of reading. As I mentioned last week, I think I finished up playing Ni No Kuni on the PlayStation 3. So I have moved on to the much more shallow, but no less fun Dragon's Crown, which is the controversial kind of hand-drawn hack and slash, which is the spiritual successor, if not successor, to Odin Sphere and Princess Crown. Really good game. I'm enjoying it. All the controversy for the really comically drawn female characters, and male characters for that matter, aside. It's pretty like 12-year-old boy's conception of what a woman might look like.
To channel Rick here for a moment, I have a favorite bathroom reading magazine that has a review of another spiritual successor to Dragon Crown. Did you ever play Muramasa, Blade of the Demons?
No, I missed that one. Was that of the same?
It was originally, apparently, supposed to be Ninja Crown.
Oh.
So, yeah, like, very in the vein of...
Any offensively drawn, like, impossibly busty women in that game?
Only as shortly occurring enemies, I think. One of the bosses is Kyoto era. I don't even know if that's an era. I'm making it up. Old Japanese woodcutting style pinup.
Ah. Well, Princess Crown had a little bit of kind of nudity. I remember fighting some sorceress or a succubus or something who was pretty out of control. And I think as your character transformed into her like adult form, I do remember her clothes like flying off and you got to fit in.
I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. You got a brief bit of nudity there, but I don't think that it was nearly as over the top as this, but whatever, man, it's great game. I'm enjoying it. And a really nice break after a really deep role-playing game that occupied a lot of my time. And, of course, we have a mutual event that we went to attend. We went together to see on the big screen Anohana, the flower that we saw that day, which was an anime feature shown in the local independent Cinema Paradiso in nearby Hollywood, Florida. There are two locations, one in my current town of Fort Lauderdale and one in our historical hometown of Hollywood. We chose to go to the Hollywood one. And I thought we had a good time, and it's a perfect motivation for tonight's episode. So we can briefly discuss that and then move on to the real meat of tonight's episode, which is Area 88, the fighter plane-inspired anime franchise, also known as UN Squadron in the U.S. if you bought the game for the Super NES. But let's talk some Anohana first. What did you think, man?
So I have one complaint, and it's not even really about the movie. It's just about talking about the movie. I've told a few people, a couple of casual friends or whatever. Oh, what'd you do last week? Oh, I went to the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival showing of Anohana. Oh, really? What's that? Well, it's an anime. Oh, it's a cartoon. And it just rekindled this like hatred I have of anything animated immediately being dismissed as like elementary. This was a really good movie. This was an emotional movie with an actual like tear-jerking story, well told, well cinematographed. It was it was a film festival film. This wasn't like a cartoon.
Right. I can't speak for Europe or South America, but at least that is a North American attitude. People here, if they see something animated, they assume it's for children and it's not to be taken seriously. That's just, there's some peculiarity in our culture that causes that to be the case. And if you really want a juxtaposition between our attitude toward animation, I'm sure you've seen, and this came in a fairly timely fashion considering tonight's topic, the Subaru ad from Japan, which featured Attack on Titan, the very popular anime series.
I have seen that.
As a driver of a Subaru, it made me kind of proud, I will confess. But that kind of tells you where we're at. It wasn't like a jokey ad. It was like full on, like, this is the Subaru Forester, which is a pretty well-respected grocery getter of a car. And it's running from, like, these Titans, these CG-rendered Titans, in what might have been a preview for the live-action adaptation that is to come for that series. But you'll never see anything like that in the U.S. You might see, unless it's jokey, right? Animation is considered accessible here if it's comedic, right? Simpsons is okay, et cetera.
Well, I think the closest thing you'll get, and it's not an exact parallel, but you remember the Warcraft ads?
The, like when they inserted Warcraft into the movie Office Space and that sort of thing, or?
No, God, who was it? I think it was Ford, wasn't it? Like, Ford did an ad where a Ford was an epic mount in World of Warcraft.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty close. That's definitely subculture enough. I guess subculture enough to draw a... Sorry. That's definitely subcultural enough that you can draw a parallel between that and animation, but... I think that's a testament to video gaming being more mainstream than anime still is. You know what I mean? Anime and animation are still, it's either a joke or it's for kids, but it's never to be taken seriously.
Yeah. I don't think it's in the American mentality.
It's really not. And it's sad because and this is sort of an aside. We'll get back on topic in a moment. Everyone I have ever shown Grave of the Fireflies has been like in tears. There's once you can get past, I'm watching a cartoon. And just appreciate that you're watching a different form of story presentation, you can really get a lot out of animated films. So kind of a shame that we're not there yet, but we here at the Nerdtravaganza podcast, by patronizing such events as the Anohana feature, are doing our part to make things better.
We're trying.
Right. So back to the movie. It was great. It was definitely worthy of being presented as part of a film festival. I should have mentioned at the outset that it was part of the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival here in our hometown of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I have to confess, I haven't seen anything else at the film festival. I have been to other films at the film festival, and this seemed like it was human interest enough to have a place there.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. This was not... episodic. This was not comedic. This was a film about a group of friends trying to cope with something and how it affected decades of their lives. I thought it was great. And if this had been live action, it probably would have made $1 billion or whatever. Like,
yeah, it had everything that a typical story about coping with a tragedy in life should have. And there is the ultimate, and I hope I'm not using this term incorrectly, catharsis at the end that you want. They give it to you in spades. And I think you leave emotionally satisfied. You've been brought down to the depths with these characters and then back up to the light. You know what I mean?
This would have been one of those, you know, quote unquote chick flick date movies. And it would have, you know, done very, very well.
You know something, Brian? You just made a great point. If somebody proposed to take somebody on a date to this movie that wasn't an anime fan, they would turn their nose up on it. They would find it bizarre. And that's sad because I think it's a, I don't want to use the term chick flick, but it's a movie that would appeal to anybody wanting to have an emotional experience in the theater.
Let's just say Nicholas Spark could have written this.
God, I don't get the reference. Why do you always pull out references I don't get?
Sorry.
Explain that one.
He writes the postcard, the walk, the phone call, the journal, the this, the that, every chick flick written in the last 10 years.
Okay, all right. The movies, in other words, that I will not admit to having been brought to tears watching myself.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I, you know, I'm too manly to cry, but I was definitely moved by this movie, I will say.
So there was some really good online discussion after the event, which made me feel a little bit more communal because, you know, we went and it was a tiny little theater and, well, was there 15, 20 kids there?
Yeah, I would say.
Well, I went home and I just happened to see a thread and I didn't realize it was the same. It was one showing the same time all over the country. So people in Los Angeles were talking about it and people in, you know, Kansas were talking about it and people all over were talking about it. And I guess we were either too late to get it or too small a venue to get any at all. But as cool as the little posters we got were, the first, like, 100 people or whatever that showed up at Los Angeles got a letter.
Got an actual letter from... Yes. It's hard to get too into that without... Got a letter from the great beyond, let's say.
Watch it, and you'll realize how awesome that is. That's really cool. That's, like, killer memorabilia for the movie.
That is really awesome, man. Wow.
But, the consensus online, everybody was joking that they managed to not cry until one asshole in the theater broke. And then they heard the sobbing and started crying.
Oh. It was a moving enough movie that I think crying was a completely appropriate reaction.
There was definitely some sobbing in our theater.
Yeah, you are correct about that. And the movie did a great job bringing that out. I really don't want to get into the specifics of it because as much as spoilers don't bother me, I think mentioning too much really would ruin this movie for people. So if you're a fan of anime and you want to see a serious movie, go see this. If you are hesitant about watching an animated feature and you have an opportunity to see this and you want an adult movie and you want it proven to you that animation is a serious form of art that adults can consume without songs and dancing tableware or like lame flashback jokes, go see Anohana. And once you've seen Anohana and determined the proper pronunciation so that you can chastise me for my American bastardization of it, come back and talk to us. And then we can guide you into tonight's main topic, which is Brian.
Area 88. As much as I grew up on calling it UN Squadron, it feels wrong now.
It definitely does. So, Brian, why don't you... We had the same introduction to this franchise in our, teen year. So why don't you go ahead and let the audience know what UN Squadron is, how it ties into Area 88, and how our interest in this was sort of kindled.
Well, UN Squadron... back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, there were these places where large quarter-munching machines were assembled called arcades. And UN Squadron was this really killer arcade game. It was actually, if I remember correctly, three-player, and you could play each of the pilots. And it's a side-scrolling shooter, and it was a really killer game. It had varied stages, so it never got boring. It was a great game, and being cooperative didn't hurt, because I used to go to the arcades with friends, and we always wanted something to do together. And probably its greatest draw, for me at least, because I wanted to, once upon a time, be this badass Top Gun pilot, was it had a variety of aircraft in it. Each pilot had their own aircraft. And then, of course, in the Super Nintendo game, you could purchase new aircraft. And, wow, I mean, you started off with a crappy, like, Phantom, didn't you? And then you could buy, God, I don't even remember them all, but just 10 different aircraft that you could upgrade to. And each pilot had slightly different stats. And I spent a lot of time just perfecting that.
Yeah, UN Squadron was awesome because you had... Okay, so I played the arcade one briefly, and... The Super Nintendo did a really good job bringing home the graphics of the arcade. I won't say that they were necessarily one-to-one, but as with like games like Street Fighter, the Super NES did a good job capturing the essence of the arcade title. And it was deeper, right? You got, you had the three main characters. So the characters were from the original manga, and I guess the original OVA series that we never saw. Shin, Mickey, and the bearded Buddha himself, Greg.
Craig.
And they all three had their distinctive planes, and you could upgrade them. You could get new weapons, but eventually you could buy like better planes. And I would want to go, I want to go back and play the game to see if, at least in the case of Shin, the main character from the anime and manga, his plane progression followed his plane progression in the series. So
I really did play a lot of this, and I really remember a lot about the game. And I always kind of hated it as a kid because I wanted to be... Because Sinji kind of looks like Roy Fokker, whatever, from Robotech / Macross.
Right.
And I basically love that guy. I always wanted him to like really be my big brother. So I wanted to play as Sinji because he looked like that. And I was like, oh, this is a badass character. And he is... He's the best pilot... Immediately, like he learns the skills the fastest. I think he started off in a better plane, something like that. He was the best pilot to just get into the game with. But if you really wanted to like actually progress and beat the game, what happened at the end was once you had all the experience points, that evened out. And his special ability kind of went away. Like, he was like, oh, I learned everything faster, but now I just can't do anything with this experience. Whereas Greg, who was the slow learner, what's his special ability?
You tell me. I don't remember.
He can take a beating.
Oh, right, because he's in, like, the A-10, right?
Well, he's the one that always survives even the worst crashes and everything.
Oh, of course I should know that from having watched the anime, sure, yes.
So he's the sturdiest pilot, which it takes him longer to learn all the cool shit, but once you're at the last levels or whatever, his being able to take a hit like that makes him much better at the game. He's so much easier to play with in the end once you, like, tough it out.
Man, you have spent some time with this game.
Wow. Love that game.
So you can sort of appreciate that there is a relationship between the character attributes from the video game and the attributes in the anime.
Yeah, I can, and I think that that's actually really cool. Because, again, I came from things kind of backwards, because I know the manga existed for years before I ever played the game. But having played the game... When I saw in the anime Greg being a badass and, like, walking away from these horrific crashes and everything, I was like, that makes total sense.
This
of
is
course.
So... Oh, this is great. So our deciding to, on a whim, explore Area 88 for our 88th episode, in case that hasn't become clear yet, audience members, has given you a new appreciation for this ancient video game that we both love so much.
Which I already spent far too much time appreciating, yep.
I'm going to have to fire out my Super NES, and I believe I do have a copy of UN Squadron, but if I don't, acquire one so that I can now see it through this more clear lens. So, speaking of the anime, I never read the manga. I guess you just mentioned that you never did, so we don't have that experience. There were some OVA releases in the 80s, which would have been probably more timely with the manga's original run. I have no idea if it's in print in any form now, by the way. But what we decided to watch was the circa 2004-2005 TV series, which spanned, I think, what, 12 episodes?
Yeah, I think it was 12.
Okay. Of which I have admittedly only watched 6 because I only have 2 DVDs and there are 3 episodes on each DVD, so I will have to defer to you on anything past the midway point. But we kind of want to give the audience an impression of this series more than a list of blow-by-blow happenings. So what did you think, man? I thought coming to it late as we did and being presented an anime with a bunch of like airplanes dating from the 60s and 70s... maybe even the 80s, I thought it held up. I liked it.
One of the things that I like most about it is it really felt like old anime. It really felt like an 80s action series. I thought they captured that throwback really well.
The only tell is that they have the, I guess you would call them cel-shaded CG planes for the aerial combat sequences, which I think are awesome looking, so I'm not complaining. But that's the only thing that lets you know it was made in 2005 rather than 1985.
As far as all of the development and as far as the action and everything, it just really brought me back, man. It was great.
Even the style, like the photographer. So
with 35mm film?
With 35mm film, wearing like the denim, like, you know, vest and pants and how with the 80s feathered hair. Like, they did a great job preserving that and giving you a sense of the time. And I'm with you, man. Great job bringing an anime from the 80s into the early 2000s, I think. Now, without giving too much away, let's entice our audience with some tidbits about the anime. So we can tell them the general gist of it, can we not, without spoiling it?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe, yeah, shouldn't be a problem.
All right, so you're a storyteller by nature, Brian. Give them sort of the 30,000 foot view. Oh boy, I worked on that one all day. Of Area 88.
Basically, it's kind of Middle East, hell zone, you know, desert, continual warfare. There's kind of a like a feeling of we're the good guys fighting this evil oppressive regime. But the whole gist of it is, instead of this being one country's standing army, these dudes are mercenaries that get paid to go on these sorties. And they can choose their sorties. They can choose not to go on sorties, for which they get penalized. And they get bonuses for exceptional performance. They get bonuses for shooting people down. They get bonuses for doing it faster or doing it more in one day, or they're doing it for money, which sets up the whole, it's a military show, but it's not a military show because they have to worry about if they fire all their missiles, they don't make enough money to buy them back. So, what's his name? The kid.
Oh gosh. I can't remember the kid's name right now.
Whatever. There's one inexperienced, like, 12-year-old pilot who has, like, this POS plane, and he's worried about being able to afford lunch when he gets back because he hasn't gotten enough kills.
He has a Harrier, by the way, which I object to you calling a POS.
Well, I mean, it is kind of a, in the anime, at least, he is one of the broke-ass, beat-up pilots.
Yeah, you're right about that. I really like that aspect of it. I like that it's totally plausible even today. This wealthy Middle Eastern country hires basically a mercenary air force to fight not all of its battles, because it's implied that this kingdom for whom they're fighting has its own standing military, but these guys are like the special ops as like ace pilots, right? At least in the case of the protagonist, he has a contract that's unbreakable, right? Unless he buys his way out of it.
Yeah, they are in for, I think it's a 3-year commitment. Or they can earn so much and then basically donate that, I guess, and walk away.
Right. The only way out of your contract is to raise the $1.5 million, which at like $30,000 per sortie is going to take a while. I mean, I don't know if you can like destroy an enemy battalion and get a lot more points or what. But in a way, it almost seems too video gamey to be believed. But in a world where we hire mercenary forces to do our fighting for us, and I'm not trying to get political, but that does go on. Is it really that far-fetched?
The far-fetched part would be McCoy having access to all of these.
Oh, right. So McCoy runs the PX, or post exchange, for people who have never been in the military, which, unlike any PX or BX I've been into, having been an enlisted person in the Air Force at one point in time, features not just cigarettes and provisions for day-to-day life, but airplanes that he could just order from you out of a catalog, apparently.
Which keeps those piled up in the back.
Right. I don't quite get the economics of this, because I think planes are millions of dollars. So I don't understand if maybe you buy those, but then the kingdom retains ownership once your flying is done or what. But it seems like if you go to McCoy and like, hey, man, I want to turn in this you know, this A-10 for an F-14, he can make that happen for you.
It was Angel of Death, wasn't it? He was trying to upsell. He's like, come on, man, this is a bit old.
Right.
Needs a new paint job. Why don't you buy a new one? Come on.
Yeah, trying to get him to upgrade. Yeah, so basically, you've got the main character who's locked into this contract. He's trying to buy his way out of it so he can get home early. And you've got a mysterious photographer who we already mentioned in full 80s garb who is intent on getting the perfect shot. Right, Brian?
It's a little ominous. I don't think it's the perfect shot. I think he's a shot. Because he keeps saying that one shot, that one shot. So I think he's supposed to take a certain
picture. I think we could call it the ultimate shot.
Yeah.
Right. So without giving anything more away, there's no more that we can really say along those lines. Basically, you've got Shin, the pilot who wants to get home to Japan, a cast of other pilots who are really colorful. So you've got Mickey, who we already mentioned from the video game, who I thought was in more of the Roy Fokker role as the senior pilot, but Shin's better than him, so not really.
It gets a little clouded because he's the most experienced of the group, but he's not the ace.
Right. He's the vet, let's say. He's been through a lot. He's seen things, man. So you've got Shin, Mickey, and then you've got Greg, who is the kind of stocky, can't kill him. I'm going to guess pseudo-comic relief would be the way to put it, I guess.
Yeah, he's the not terribly serious character.
And then you've got the kid, whose name I can't remember, and a beautiful woman who just showed up in the last episode I watched. I'm not sure what role she's going to play yet. And a collection of – they're really good about having red shirts – but it seems like anybody with a purple jumpsuit is doomed. So don't wear a purple flight suit if you want to survive. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I noticed that pattern. If you suit up in purple, you're not coming back from this mission. And it's cool, man. I think it must have really resonated with a mid-80s audience when Top Gun and all the knockoffs of Top Gun were all the rage and everybody wanted to be a fighter pilot. And for us, Robotech, the U.S. adaptation of Macross, was the hottest of hot. This was probably really, really resonant with audiences back then in a way that it might only be resonant with us now. But here I was trying to sell it. I might be underselling it and saying that. Do you think that this would still appeal to let's say, a contemporary anime fan?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, that's not the answer I wanted, but it might be the truth. Why not?
There's no screaming. It's not very marketable. There's no like toys or I don't really see a lot of like posters that you could do out of it. I don't know. It's great, but it's contemporary. You're looking at like the Toonami crowd.
I would settle for that. If this made its way to Toonami, I would be like, yes.
Yeah, but I don't think you can lure in the Naruto fans.
Oh, I suppose not. Although the original crop of Naruto fans should be in their 20s by now, no?
Yeah, maybe early 20s, yeah.
Well, there's no telling. I will say that I noticed through my exhaustive Wikipedia research that in Japan, there was or may still be a line of models specifically from this anime. So fighter planes, like of the kind you could probably get from testers anyway, but specifically the planes that were featured in the series. So it must have had enough of a following to warrant its own line of models, as well as a couple of OVAs and then a redone anime adaptation in 2005. You know what I think would have really been illuminating? To have been in Japan in 1985 and now, and seen who gravitated toward this. Because I'm guessing a 10-year-old in 1985 who was 30 in 2005 when this re-release was done was probably like all nostalgic and like, yes! And just like we like it, was loving the fact that it was faithful to the 80s style.
I think this will lose some of our younger audience, but I think this is a real otaku series.
Oh, is that no longer a badge of honor in the West to be called such a thing? Is that something to be ashamed of?
I think weeboo's the new thing. Otaku's just out of use. I mean, you might as well say like antediluvian or something.
I thought Weebo was a pejorative, though. I thought you did not want to be called such a thing.
I believe the mainstream doesn't want you to be, but people who are wear it as a badge of honor. We're retaking the word.
Retaking the word Weebo.
Hmm.
Is that strictly saying a Westerner who's into anime, basically, though? Or I thought that was an American or a Western invention. Was that a Japanese word?
Weebo? No, I don't think so. No.
I think we've got perfectly acceptable names already. Geek, nerd, etc. Although, I'm really... With every passing week, I think we have come closer to the end of the mainstreaming of geek culture. So, I guess what I'm thinking is, if you consider how many people are going to be left behind when the mainstream culture moves on to the next thing, and of that narrow segment, you take the segment that would be interested in watching Area 88 with us, this podcast will net us 3 to 5 fellow travelers, Brian.
Yeah, that's probably about right. 10% of 10%.
Right, 10% of 10% of the 0.001% of our that is our target audience. Yes, that is our post geek culture crash of 20 whatever audience. Okay, so as a final pitch of Area 88 / UN Squadron, we're going to go down a list of likes, and based on your likes, we're going to recommend Area 88. It's kind of like Amazon recommending a product, only we are very biased in that we want to tie just about anything we can into Area 88. So we'll do a rapid fire, and if you like any of these things, you should watch Area 88. And while you're at it, check out Anohana. All right, Brian, go first. If you like blank, you'll like Area 88.
Well, I think Robotech's the easy one.
Okay, if you like Robotech, you'll like Area 88. I agree. If you like fighter planes, you will like Area 88.
If you like cameras, 35mm film.
Yes. If you like anime, you might like Area 88.
If you like overthrowing small Middle Eastern governments,
you'll definitely like Area 88. And you are considered a neocon in our political spectrum. If you like the desert or stories set in the desert, you'll like Area 88.
If you like the concept of earning your breakfast by disrupting enemy supply lines.
Nice. That's a good one. I like that one. If you like impossibly poofy-haired protagonists who can fly fighter planes with no trouble, in spite of the fact that their, like, swoop hairstyle is in their one eye, you will like this show.
That is the only reason I watch this show. Actually, I love that. Rick had it, and Shinji has it, and it's perfect.
Awesome. I think that's probably the topper, then, unless you've got any more.
I cannot beat that. No way.
All right. Well, let's continue in that vein, then, and say that if you like podcasts, and you like this podcast, and you've liked any of our other podcasts, you'd probably also like being a subscriber to our podcast. So we recommend that you subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or whatever other podcatching software you happen to use. Rate us favorably, give us an actual number of stars or anohanas or whatever the scale is. And write us a great review if possible. In addition, check out our website, nerdstravaganza.com, and drop us an email if you like at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and Instagram, plus one us on Google+. And don't forget to join our super private secret group on Facebook for all of the insider action.
So until next episode, listeners, look for us in our blue sky.